And welcome, everyone, to a fresh edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast, the trade deadline edition, the quiet trade deadline edition, if you will, alongside the Chelsea blogger, the NHL.com. Are you senior? You're not a senior correspondent yet. Scott King here from MBIce Arena. I'm Chris Bowden, your pre and post game host on WGN Radio for Blackhawks hockey. Are you done? We were ready to do this. There's one more sandwich for Scott on his plate. So I put a timer on him, and he appears to be finished.
First of all, don't tell me what I'm not when we start the show. I don't know if they even have senior correspondents. I think they're just staff writers. But no, there was also a food deadline, and my food deadline was that I could have an extra half sandwich that the Blackhawks provided by the time you got ready to do the show after sending some audio in. And I got something in ahead of the food deadline.
It was close, but there's still food stuck in your teeth there as we begin our podcast right now. But it was nice of the Blackhawks to provide some cold cuts, some sandwiches, some chips. There was some fruit in there as well, some apples and oranges. And then there was dessert. So the Blackhawks tempting us once again. But I'm not really surprised at what Stan Bowman, as it turns out, in quite frank language, didn't do at this trade deadline, because I had a sense, and unfortunately most Blackhawk fans on social media don't get the sense, I was joking, you don't have food in there, that he wasn't going to be in the rental market giving up first and second round picks to try and sneak this team into the playoffs. It's managed to find its way into contention as it is, and we'll talk about the two losses over the weekend in a bit, but I never sensed that he was going to be in the market for a Mark Stone or, you know, a Gustav Nyquist or any of these other guys in order to hopefully get the Blackhawks in the playoffs, because they fought their way back in it as is, and there have been so many years past where he was sacrificing first and second round picks that I think a process has begun, and he was simply going to look for the kind of trade that he's made already so far this season, the likes of which with Arizona and Edmonton, where he got pieces back in return that could potentially be long-term pieces to this roster moving forward. I don't know. Were you surprised at all that it was this quiet?
No, I expected it. I just felt like it was a year where the way things unfolded, they were going to need a lot more than one or two good players, you know, if they are able to sneak into the playoffs to do some damage and go further or to be set down the line for next year. I just thought that, you know, they have what they have, and they're going to try to sneak in. They're, you know, what are they now, 4 points back?
No, it's after those two losses over the weekend to Colorado and Dallas. Yeah, they have fallen 5 points in back of Minnesota, which, as we tape here on Monday afternoon following the deadline, Minnesota at 66 points. They've rallied with three consecutive wins. Colorado has suddenly found life once again, winning 5 of 6 after dropping 8 in a row. And the Avalanche are in action against Florida tonight. So this doesn't necessarily mean we're stating that with this current roster, the Blackhawks are going to be able to make the playoffs, but they've at least made things interesting. And to, you know, sacrifice a first or second round pick when they were much closer, obviously at that time made a lot more sense. I'm just not sure that it makes sense for this team right now.
Or even just if you look at what they've done in the past, whether they're close or not, whether they're in a position where they can sneak in or not now, I don't think they want to give away any more top prospects mm-hmm. like they have the last couple of years. You know, guys down in Rockford who look to be difference makers in the future. You look at, Stan talked about the different defensemen they have in different leagues, whether it's Ian Mitchell, Adam Bockfist, or Nicholas Bodine. Those are guys you want to hang on to because you know your veteran decor is old and a little rusty. You know, they're trying to make things happen now. They look good in flashes. But those are shoes and skates you need to fill later on, and you hope that at least one of those three guys, if not the other defensive prospects, can fill those holes.
Enough of us babbling for now. Let's hear from the man himself, Senior Vice President and General Manager Stan Bowman. Met the media about 2:30 or so on Monday afternoon when all was said and done, even though some of the other big deals had yet to settle at the NHL. Let's hear from him. He touches on a number of topics, including some of those prospects, including the job Jeremy Colliton's done, the return of Corey Crawford as well, which is now happening after he was activated on Monday. But the first question he faced was whether he was close on anything in terms of a trade ahead of the deadline.
A couple of things were kind of on the borderline of happening, but, you know, at the end of the day, we weren't determined just to make a trade, just to make you guys happy. It had to make sense, you know, for where we're at, also short-term and long-term, and just nothing came together today.
Did the past two games, did that affect your thinking in any way, one way or the other?
No, not at all. We were never in that rental market where we were going to be trying to chase players that were expiring contracts. So we were always looking at potential real trades where you're trading a more of a filling one need and by trading an area maybe where you had a surplus, but we had a lot of talks. It just didn't come together.
We saw the news on Corey Crawford and how good to see him getting back here soon.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, he's an important part of our team, so the fact that he's been activated is a great sign, and can't wait to see him on the ice.
How would you evaluate the job Jeremy's done since he's taken over the team?
Well, things are much different now than they were in the beginning in terms of our team is playing more like a cohesive team. And, you know, I think the last couple games are a good example where the results don't always match up sometimes. I thought we've played two of our better games these past two, and we haven't gotten the results, but we had a long stretch there. We were winning games and maybe not playing our best, and I think that's what happens sometimes in sports, but in hockey for sure is you don't always get paid off for when you're playing your best. But last two games were great effort for our team. I think, you know, it was like a playoff game, I thought. The intensity from our fans was incredible. It was a buzz in the building, and I really liked the way we responded. And we played really good. Unfortunately, we didn't win, but if we play like that down the stretch, I think we're going to win a lot of games. So you're always trying to take the positive out of even some losses, but I thought we did some really good things in those games. You got to try to build on that, and you know, ultimately, you got to get some victories. But I liked what I saw, and I think we've been seeing that with our team over the past, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. We've seen it come together. No question, the power play's played a big part in that. You know, I think we talked about that being an important part, and it didn't come together right away. But you know, it's nice to see that. Have a lot of confidence. You know, I think, you know, we watch those guys step on the ice and they think they're going to score every time. And it's just a different vibe from what it was 3 months ago. So I think, you know, Jeremy's played a big role in turning that around. And, you know, so I'm happy with that part of it. When you have a good power play, you're in the game most nights. And we've got to keep that going.
Stan, can you say that of your conversations the last few days, it was more teams calling you looking at your players than maybe vice versa?
I don't know how to break it down. It was a little of both. You know, part of your job is to make outbound calls and just try to poke around to see if there might be a fit. And certainly teams called us on some things as well. So I don't know. It was pretty even split from that.
Did it ever get to a point where you went to any of the players who have no movement clauses to ask if they'd be willing to wait?
No.
You guys obviously become competitive, and Jeremy said himself that it's probably not an elite team yet. How do you make that next step? Do you see this offseason and the cap space you guys possibly can have to complete that puzzle?
That's part of it. You know, reshaping your team doesn't happen overnight. I think it's a process. It's not like one or two moves. I think the process has begun already. You know, with some of the trades that we've made, we've you look back at where we were 4 months ago to the team we have now, and we think some things have changed for the better. You know, we've really got two pretty reliable, consistent offensive lines, and you know, some of the guys on those, you know, Kajula wasn't here, and he's been a nice addition, and same thing with Strome. So those moves have already happened, and you know, we're going to probably look at reshaping our team through potential trades between now and next season, and as well as free agency. Those are the two ways, as well as players, you know, like graduating from junior to the American League or from the American League to NHL.
You mentioned you're excited having Corey back, but how much of a level of concern is there for him? Obviously, his second, you know, concussion that we know of, has been out for a long time. Moving forward now.
Of course, you're concerned. You want every player to avoid injury, not just Corey, but all of our guys. I think, you know, he's certainly prepared himself well. He's really worked at it. He's taken his time. I know, you know, there's a lot of, concern for him, not only from the media and the fans, but you know, internally, to make sure that he's on the right path and he's ready to play. And you know, I think when you talk to him, which you know, he's excited. He wants to get back on the ice. I know he's been pushing for us to get him back there even sooner. But you got to do things the right way and follow the protocols and listen to the doctors, and that's how we got to this point.
What did you learn about Colin Delia? I mean, do you feel comfortable with him being one of your top two goalies in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think as a normal progression for a young goalie, he's had some ups and downs, but he's more had a lot more ups than downs, and he certainly came out of the gate flying. And I think you know, the thing we like about Colin is just how much he's a competitive guy, and he's shown the ability to grow his game even in the short time he's been a pro. He's taken some big steps in a short amount of time. So part of that is learning the NHL, and you know, these guys are the best players in the world. So you know, once you're up here for 5, 10, 20 games, you get scouted more, and they, you know, so then your job as a goalie is to step up your preparation and work on your technical part of your game. And that's what I love about Colin, is he's really a student of the game. You know, if you talk to him, you know, he wants to get better. He's always trying to push himself to expand his game. So no, I think the future's bright for him, so we're excited he's part of it.
Going back to last July, was there any time you ever approached Paul Seabrook or his agent about waiving his no-movement clause?
I don't want to get into that. I think once we start, then we're going to ask the next guy and the next guy. So I don't want to approach those conversations.
That's fine. There's just as far as the rest of your defensemen and just trying to get, you know, a lot of them coming up, obviously. Mm-hmm. Have any concerns about how the roster's going to take shape?
Having too many players, I've never been concerned about that. I would much rather have lots of options, because when you do, then you can use them to fill in a gap somewhere else. So if we've got too many guys coming and they're all going to help our team, I would take that position any day. So that's not a bad thing.
Stan, there's been a lot of excitement about this team and its place, and the standings getting back in this playoff picture. But as you mentioned, it's all kind of come together, at least the way that you appreciate this roster. What have you learned about what this team can do now in the bigger picture and moving forward?
Well, I think just in the last couple months, we've seen what a little bit of confidence and belief does. I think we were doing some good things even as far back as, you know, December, but it wasn't really translating into wins. And I think part of that is just learning to believe in the process, as well as there was some more familiarity with a new coach and the structure of how we wanted our team to play. It didn't happen right away, but I think now there's probably less thinking and there's more just playing on instinct, because they've been doing things longer. So I think that bodes well for the future. I think we've shown that even with essentially a very similar roster, we've gotten better results because we're executing better. So if that continues and then we add some new pieces, I think there's reason for optimism in the coming years.
Stan, I'm sure you're pleased with the development of Strome and DeBrincat, but do you have to be careful this summer about how you spend that free agency money? Does that change your approach with the way they're playing?
In terms of
their next contracts?
No, that's not going to – I mean, it's always a factor when we look at adding a new player or signing a current player. I mean, we have things modeled out many years in the future, so it's no different than it's been in the past, I would say. So I think the fact that they're both thriving is a great thing. I mean, you know, they've made a big difference to our team. You look at our offensive production. We're a pretty potent team as far as scoring goals, so, and they're a big part of it. You know, it's hard when you have one line. Teams are pretty good about being able to stymie one line. When you've got two lines that are a threat, and if you can ever get a third line, and that's what we probably haven't quite found that yet. We're looking for, we have elements of it. We haven't found that third line to be a real dangerous line, but I think if we can build that, we're going to be hard to shut down.
Stan, speaking of potent, Patrick Kane had a streak snapped yesterday, but obviously he's been incredibly productive all year long. What can you say about him this season?
He makes it look easy. It's not as easy as he makes it look, trust me. You watch him out there, and I don't know if I've ever seen him play better. I think that's the the pretty neat thing about Patrick is he always finds ways to add something new to his game. And I think, I don't even know if there's one thing he added, but over the summer, he comes back and he looks refreshed and he looks like he's better than ever. So he's a threat every time he's on the ice. Doesn't matter what line he's on. Doesn't matter the situation in the game. If anything, as the game's on the line, he's one of those few guys that seems to really play better as the stakes are higher. So we're fortunate to have him here, and he's played a huge role in, you know, this surge that we've had lately.
At this time last year, it seemed like Jokiharju was taking that step in Portland and kind of sensing that he could be, you know, able to do this. Are you getting the sense of whether Boqvist or Beaudin or Mitchell are progressing similarly? How would you kind of assess where they're at now?
Yeah, I'm in the different leagues, so it's kind of hard to necessarily compare one. I was in the Western League versus college and Ontario League, Quebec. So they're all sort of in different situations, but they've all had great seasons. I think they've taken the next step in their development. And Adam's case, going to London, I think it was a big change for him just to come to North America, you know, to get used to life over here. And he's been very effective offensively, and I think that's important because he's an offensive defenseman. So if he were to come over here and have a hard time scoring, he's going to get frustrated. I mean, I think at the end of the day, his offense is not something we're ever concerned with. He's got to learn the two-way game. And I think, you know, it's been a good step for him from that perspective. I think he's got 17 goals. So he's a lot of goals for a defenseman. So he's certainly doing the offensive thing. And for him, the measurement's going to be, can he defend? And, you know, as he gets stronger and learns tactics to handle bigger and stronger players. But this was a good first step for him. You know, the other two guys as well, Mitchell and Beaudin, have both been standout players in their league. So I think it looks very promising for where they are. I try not to put a timeline on it or handicap which one's ahead of the other one. They're all really progressing nicely. I don't think any of them has stalled in their progression. They've all taken that next step forward, which is great to see, and we want that to continue in the coming couple of years.
The belief you see from the players, you said you notice that, you can see it with the wins as they've come, but has your belief been strengthened based on, you know, seeing the results coming with this group?
Well, yeah, things are much looking up. I think if we were talking a few months ago, you know, it looked like we were so far behind everybody. And, you know, I saw good things when you sit down and sort of watch the video and some things we were trying to get our players to do, and you see it, but the wins weren't there. But now when you see it translate into victories and you get on a bit of a streak, and, you know, we've done it recently. We've went on a winning streak, so there's no reason we can't get back and start another one, you know, in our next game. So it is nice to see success. I think it's a lot more fun talking about victories, and the guys get life. And I think, like I said the other night, it was incredible atmosphere. Our fans were really into the game, and they always are, but it was like at another level, and I think that's what we're looking for. We want to continue to give them something to be excited about.
And Nisimov's role's changed, I guess, over the last season. Do you still see a long-term fit for him being here?
Yeah, his role did change, I guess, in the sense that Strom took some of those minutes as an offensive guy, but I think Artie's played well the last week or two. He's really, there was a stretch there where he was trying to, on different lines. I think now I've liked his game recently, so he's a versatile player. Like, obviously, he had success a couple years ago playing with Patrick Kane on an offensive line. But I think the thing we've always liked about him, he's got that versatility. He kills penalties. He can play on other lines as well. He doesn't have to just be a scoring line. So that's nice to have as a centerman.
This season, you guys have gone from being virtually out of the playoff conversation to being maybe they can sneak in on a wild card. Looking at this situation, how long do you think it's going to take for you guys to be real contenders in a Stanley Cup run and not just an on-the-border playoff team?
Oh, well, the goal is to keep progressing year to year. So a year from now, we want to be in a better spot than we are now. Where that is in the standings, we're not trying to map it out that precisely, other than to say, you know, we want to be in a better spot than we are today, and same thing the year after that. So I think we're headed in the right direction for sure. The timing on how all that happens, there's a lot of factors. It's hard to predict it, but we want to be a team that's in a better spot a year from now than we are now.
So just to clarify, going back to today, if you weren't interested in the rental market that you've done so much in the past and the cost has been high, the hope was to kind of make the same kind of trades that you've made earlier this season and getting a hockey trade to get someone that will be here for the future too?
Right. I think that was the thought, was if we were going to make a trade, it had to be something that wasn't trading away a lot of assets for a guy that's only going to be here for a couple months. That didn't make sense. But as far as other trades where you have, you know, sometimes you have a surplus in one position or you have another team that's looking for a specific thing and you can get an even swap out. We had some talks like that. It just didn't materialize.
Curious what you thought of what Columbus did over the last few days.
I'm sorry?
Of what Columbus did over the last few days.
Yeah, they made a lot of moves. Obviously, they're really pushing hard this year. So you see that every year. There's usually one or two teams that really likes the group that they have, and they feel like it makes sense to go in. So this should be interesting to watch.
When you see Nashville and Winnipeg doing what you guys did for years, it almost make you wistful for when you were able to just go for broke every spring.
I don't know. I mean, there's two sides to that. I think, rarely does that work. I think the one time when we acquired, Hanzus and Vermette, so it did work those 2 years for us, but, most often it doesn't work. So I there's two sides to that. I mean, there's a lot of deals made today. There's only one team that's going to win, and there's some teams that didn't do anything, so it could be one of those teams, and then, half these teams are going to lose in the first round. So it there's always two sides to it. You can't necessarily wish you're somewhere else. This is where we are, and we're excited about the fact that we've shown progress and the future's bright.
Was it difficult to remain patient and not try to do something that might help you this year to get in the playoffs?
I don't think it was difficult, no. I think we're trying to build back to be an elite team, and that's just all part of the process. So, there's steps involved, and to make a trade just to say you made a trade, that's never been a great strategy for long-term success.
Do you see an upside to not making the playoffs and ending up with a lottery pick?
No, I mean, we want to win. And I think winning is a good environment for your... We've seen it in the last month with our team. Just, it really can also accelerate the development of being in important games. We've got a few guys here that have won a lot of playoff games and Stanley Cups. We've got a bigger group that's never won a playoff game. So, to be in the mix and to play meaningful games until April, there's a lot of value in that. And I think where you end up is where you end up. But we got to keep pushing here. And we like the strides that we've taken. And we like the fact that some of these young players are playing in really important games. And it's just a different feel. If you think back to a game in November and you think back to the game on Friday night, it was a different feel. I mean, you guys watched it. It was a different atmosphere in the building, and that's something that there's no proxy for that. You have to go through it. And in order to do it, you got to put yourself in position to experience it.
You mentioned the importance of confidence. Is there any hesitation in inserting Corey while he's trying to find his feet while you guys are still in the playoff hunt?
In terms of
just how he's going to have to, see pucks again for the first time, and you guys' points are at a premium.
Well, he's been practicing for a couple of weeks, so he's been seeing a lot of pucks. And I think he's tired of practicing. There's always going to be that first game when you're off. So, when you've been off the ice for a while, the game action, there's really no replica for that. But he's been practicing quite a bit, so I think he's tired of practicing.
For all the armchair general managers out there on social media who think they have the answer to everything and want to express their rage or insecurities or disappointments through their tweets and posts and things like that, it is comical to hear and to watch some of these twidiots with some of their comments as the trade deadline comes and goes, because they know everything. But I think Stan explains himself fairly well there, and as Scott and I were talking about in the first segment, on what his approach was going to be. What are you giggling about here? Are you reading some of these hashtag Blackhawks posts?
Yeah, you're
right. Do we even bother giving them the air?
You shouldn't say their handles.
All right.
one here here, actually, this one's like a almost like a riddle. Stan Bowman doing nothing shows that he's so close to understanding how to build a team, but yet so far.
Okay.
It's kind of a riddle. Yeah. Maybe you cross the bridge if you can figure that out. And then someone else, Stan Bowman's face makes me mad.
That's really hilarious.
And then the
vulgarities. There's one here. Stan Bowman, go down. Stan Bowman never picked up the bleeping phone. Who the hell is he kidding?
He said he did pick up the phone. Nothing had made sense to him. People usually get really mad when they think there's a bad trade, almost a lost season, maybe a season with some hope that nothing is done. To excel in the future. I don't know. The anger is hilarious.
There seems to be a different level among hockey fans, and the Blackhawks fans obviously fall under that. So some of this stuff is just hilarious.
They weren't able to get Sidney Crosby or
right.
Connor McDavid.
So. Yeah, they took a swing, and it didn't quite work out. So calm down, people. Take a breath. So there's a process going on here. Before we get to Corey Crawford, let's talk about some of the moves that were made and who may have been winners and losers. And, boy, the Dallas Stars pick up Matt Zuccarello, who looks great for two periods almost, and then suffers apparently a broken arm. He's out at least 4 weeks, and they did not double back and try and make a supplemental move after hearing that news. But in terms of some other teams in the West, all Colorado did was add Derek Brassard. No team seems to want him. This is his fourth team over the course of the past year or so. Minnesota, they've kind of made lateral moves, maybe the types of moves that Stan would have made, the ones we're talking about here earlier, Ryan Donato in exchange for Charlie Coyle, getting an asset back, a young asset back. Also, they end up sending Mikhail Granlund to Nashville in exchange for Kevin Fiala, a guy who might be able to be a player for them as well. Nashville, on the other hand, they waited down to the wire. I didn't think signing Cody McLeod and Brian Boyle was going to be enough. But then right before the deadline, they make that Granlund trade. I'm not necessarily a bigger fan of Granlund than I am with Fiala. But then they pick up Wayne Simmonds from Philadelphia. Ryan Hartman goes the other way. St. Louis fairly quiet. They pick up a veteran defenseman. And Winnipeg makes a splash here with Kevin Hayes from the New York Rangers. And outside of that, the other big thing, two big things in the West, San Jose getting Gustav Nyquist from Detroit, and Vegas getting Mark Stone from Ottawa and committing to a contract with him as well. I don't know. Who were you most impressed with from a Western Conference standpoint with some of these moves?
The West, I don't know. I guess I wasn't as impressed in the West, obviously, with a certain team in the East that seems to be really going for it. But Nashville, I mean, all those trades, do you really improve a lot? There was a lot of talk around Wayne Simmonds and them getting him. Does he have that much upside offensively, or is it just kind of a bigger guy who throws his body
around?
Yeah,
no, he's been a beast during his time in Philadelphia. The thing is, he's going to be a free agent, so that doesn't necessarily force them to commit, but he's definitely someone who's going to help them immediately. That power play stinks down in Nashville for whatever reason, and he's certainly going to help them. I'm still not as big a fan of Mikhail Granlund. I don't know how much he'll help them, but maybe a change of scenery will do it there. Vegas certainly had assets in order to make this Mark Stone trade, and that was the big splash. But you mentioned the one team in the East, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and what about Jarmo Kekäläinen, their GM, just doubling down again and again and making the moves for first Matt Duchene, then Ryan DeZingle. He finished things off with a couple of more minor moves by getting Keith Kincaid and then Andrew McQuaid late in the trade deadline process on Monday. But there's a chance he's going for it. He's putting them on the table, and the possibility that he may just come up completely empty come July 1st. All these guys may be gone. So what are you if you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan right now?
You are incredibly excited and overjoyed. Even more impressive in those trades, to me, is they're keeping Panarin and Bob. Mm-hmm. So you got this really killer team on paper. A lot of the attractive players that people want to acquire today. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of go back to some of those years when the Hawks were going for it. It's a great feeling when you're going to see these guys that are top talents in the league, and it kind of makes it even more fun when you know they're going to be elsewhere later, because we're throwing all the darts at the board here. We're going for it. So it's going to be a great time to be a Blue Jackets fan.
Yeah, well, we'll see how deep they go in this playoff run. First of all, they have to make the playoffs. Now it's a lot more likely based on the additions that they made. But then the playoffs are such a crapshoot, and you know, come July 1st, it could be absolute tumbleweeds after all the excitement in Columbus if he's not able to lock down some of these players that he acquired, if not Panarin and Bobrovsky. And Antemi Panarin has given every indication that he's not necessarily interested in staying in Columbus long term. The other bit of news, obviously, Corey Crawford coming back. It has been a very slow process, I think by design, in getting him back on the practice sheet, working his way back. And now after Colin Delia's play has taken a little bit of a dip, actually since signing that contract, he's had a couple of rough ones here. And it's probably good for him to go back to Rockford, and the timing is right now. It's worked out where Corey's going to be coming back and probably, you know, mining the net on at least one of these games in the road trip, especially since there's a back-to-back over the weekend, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he wants to still be an NHL goalie, but he's going to get minutes. He's going to see even more pucks than he was here. So, you know, it's good to not, at least we're not in a position where they had to keep playing him when you started to see his performances kind of decline a little. So that's good. And then getting Crawford back, I mean, for any concerns that it's going to take him some time to get his timing back, to get that rhythm back. I remember last time he came back off of these injuries, and he said the second one wasn't as bad as last year. I remember it was just like, I think it was only like two games till they had a game where they're going to play the Lightning. And I asked Cooper how impressive it was to see a guy come back from a head injury, a goalie, and play as well Crawford did when he came back in mid-October this year, and he started talking about how he should be in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, of course, the timing might be a little off, but we're talking about Corey Crawford, who's really kind of defied logic every time he's come back from these injuries.
And he was great when he first came back this year. Then his numbers dipped a little bit as he soon discovered that the Blackhawks had some deficiencies down on the defensive end, and his numbers started sinking the way they had toward what Cam Ward's numbers were as well. It's going to be an interesting watch here to see how sharp Corey is and how long it'll take him to get sharp once again. And knock on wood, hopefully all these issues are over with, and he can play out his career the way he wants to play out his career. Did you have another thought on that or no?
No? Decline.
Decline? Okay. Let's move on. Next subject. The last two games. And all credit to the Blackhawks for rallying themselves back into wild card contention, playing well enough where you thought those two games, which did turn out to be quasi-playoff games, Friday night against Colorado, Sunday afternoon against Dallas. And wouldn't you know it, they do end up playing better than they had been in their victories earlier in the week over Ottawa and Detroit. But they were always playing catch-up in those games, these two games against the Avs and the Stars. Much better puck management and responsibility, but there were a couple of those mistakes that did end up rearing their ugly head and costing them in these two games against the Avs and Stars.
Yeah, not the results you want to see, but they did play well overall in both games, even though they were must-win games. Colleton seemed to say that game against Colorado was maybe the best game of the year in terms of effort. One of them, at least, from what he was saying. He was really happy with the effort. I think he said it was the closest to a full 60 minutes they played all season. So good effort, not good enough. These games obviously really matter now. It kind of, you can maybe, after this season, if they don't make it in the playoffs, go back to this past weekend when they started to lose ground in some really big games, back-to-back over the weekend. So, unfortunately, they didn't get the wins, but, you know, things are still kind of tight in the West, so they can string another good streak together. Who knows?
This week will be highly influential on how long they're going to be in this race. And granted, they only have one game until Saturday. That's Wednesdays at Anaheim. So these other teams, games played, standings are going to catch up to them, and then they'll know exactly where they stand. But winning against two teams below you in the standings on the road, Anaheim and Los Angeles, I think those are almost absolutely must wins if they're to stay in this thing. And then they have a game against San Jose on Sunday night, and San Jose certainly has been playing well. They're a good team, and then they added on at the trade deadline. Another thought I really wanted to take is in terms of the puck management and some costly mistakes. Yeah, overall, the Hawks did play a much better overall game in those two games, but then there are still a couple of those plays. The Slater-Cuckoo play on Friday night, the turnover that ended up in the go-ahead goal to make it 4-3. He also had a tough time on Sunday losing a blade on what turned into the first score of the game. He can't be blamed for that, but then he was right in the middle of all that. And then the Gustav Forsling turnover that gave Dallas a 2-0 lead. There are these young defensemen that the Blackhawks are giving plenty of time to, and you know, you heard Jeremy talking before Sunday's game about he's seeing a little bit of a dip in Carl Dahlstrom's play. Now Cuckoo, makes a crucial mistake. Otherwise, playing pretty well overall. And the same thing with Gustav Forsling on Sunday. And welcome to the growing pains of a young defenseman in the NHL.
It's not the best time for the growing pains when you're trying to make a push into the playoffs. But yeah, Dahlstrom was good up until this point, and he did miss both Friday and Sunday scratch. And Cuckoo, I mean, he has been very consistent since he came over. So to see that, you just hope it doesn't. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be out of the lineup, but you hope that it doesn't rattle his confidence too much, and he's able to do what he was doing before, because he has been really good up to this past weekend.
And that's the same hope you have for all these guys, you know, the Dahlstroms and the Forslings and whatnot. Finally, before we get on a couple lighter topics, Patrick Kane, his streak comes to an end. 13 shots to keep it alive on Friday night, and I think he was just a little frustrated at the way Dallas was playing him. They paid a whole lot of attention to him in Sunday afternoon's game. Not that he didn't have his share of opportunities, but he couldn't bury it. But when you look back at that 26-game streak, he had only 40 points. In this 20-game streak, he had 43. And as much as the Blackhawks are getting contributions from the Taves and the DeBrinkets and the Dylan Stroms, you know, even Duncan Keith's play has been a whole lot better during the course of this streak. I think he's been energized by this. But the guy who's really put the team on his shoulders is Patrick Kane. And I don't think you can say enough about the way this guy has performed. I know you wrote about it in your Chelsea blogger about him, being a Hart Trophy candidate. We even talked about it on the last podcast. If this team should get into the playoffs, there's no reason he shouldn't be one of the three finalists for the Hart.
Absolutely. He's done everything. The reason that they're this close is because he has been their most valuable player by a mile, and that's ahead of guys who have having very good seasons. DeBrincat, an amazing sophomore season. Taves could still possibly have his best season, I think, kind of on pace there. So really strong effort from all those guys, and top two lines, Stan Bowman talked about them a little bit, I believe. Top two lines have been really hard to play against. Just, you know, unfortunately for the Hawks, the rest of the depth offensively not as hard, and the defense not as hard to play against. But you know, I think they shut Strom down too, Dallas. You know, they really did a good job of managing those that second line, yeah. which has been, I mean, every game has been amazing.
Yeah, falling into that 3-0 hole. Again, credit, because they fight and they claw their way back into the games. And then all of a sudden, that 5-on-3 situation, the too many men on the ice after they were dominating play in the third period after that tying goal, was just a killer. And then Duncan Keith takes the hooking call to make it a 5-on-3, and you could almost see it coming, unfortunately. And it's not that the Blackhawks didn't have their chance at the end of the game. They had, 6 minutes of power play time in the last of the last seven plus overall, and that power play in that particular instance, unfortunately, not able to come through and get the equalizer to at least get 1 point against Dallas. That's the real disappointing part of it, is that you don't come away with any points in those two games. So that places even more importance on this week coming up as they head out west. As we wrap up here, you're heading out of town to hopefully some warmer climes, right?
Yes. Shortly, we will be going to Disney World, my son's first time there.
Okay.
Daughter second time, so really, really looking forward to it. Did the whole register your trip, get some fast pass thing, you know, on the app. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And so your daughter going the second time, she has to be extra jacked about this, right?
She is.
Are you taking her out of school?
It's a sore subject. No, it's her attendance has been phenomenal. This might be the only time she's missed it. She was sick a couple times, but only time for a non-sick related absence. But yeah, she's been watching a lot of Disney shows and movies right now. She's at that age.
You're rewarding her for a good grades is what it is, right?
Yeah, and being a good person. Yeah,
and then you'll have to send her to summer school, right?
So, right.
So you have your kids at that age. This is your moment of fatherhood right now. My moment of fatherhood, my dad moment, came at the game on Sunday. Because I do have a couple of connections, I talked to the scoreboard guy. My 21-year-old daughter's been going out with a real great guy for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years right now. Really, really good boyfriend for her. And I asked her, is she interested in going on Kiss Cam?
Oh.
So we did we did arrange that. I talked to Sergio, who handles all those matters, the scoreboard matters, before the game. I gave her the seat. I gave Sergio the seat locations, everything. Yeah, we'll make it happen. So Kiss Cam comes up, and middle of the second period, and boom. Who's the first one on Kiss Cam is my daughter and her boyfriend. And they went to the game with her boyfriend's parents. So I'm thinking, I'll say, this is just going to be a quick peck on the cheek, and they'll move on to the next one. And it turned into something a little bit more passionate than I expected.
How passionate was it?
More passionate than I expected. You know, it wasn't one of these ridiculous ones where the whole crowd goes crazy, but it was just a little longer than I expected. And anyway, she's 21, so she can do it.
So you asked her if she would want to be on, or you asked?
Yeah, with the expectation that I'm watching, she's going to be there with her boyfriend's parents, and it's just going to be something real quick. And it turned into maybe one of those, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 second ones. So it was a little disconcerting. I took a video of it because I knew she was going to be on, and then as I see it, I sent it back to her with the text, "Really?" And my wife ended up liking it and having no problem.
That's
with
amazing.
It.
Yeah. Do you think that because they knew that strings were pulled for them, that they maybe had a pregame discussion and said, let's really make this count?
I don't know. I just think just because of the fact that they knew I was going to be watching and the boyfriend's parents were going to be there, this was going to be a quick and out. And it was just a little longer than I expected.
The pressure got to them, and they felt like they had to deliver because people were watching.
Plus, the other people around them, you could tell they must have spread the word to expect them on the Kiss Cam, and they were really pumped up about it.
It's a big game. There's a lot of energy in the stadium, a lot of emotions.
I had to put my focus and concentration back in order for a couple of minutes after that. So
was there
luckily
any,
I didn't have an intermission hit there.
was there any like, I'm sure you didn't post a video, but I this is the first time hearing of this. There was no like mention of, oh, just saw my daughter at a Kiss Cam on Twitter, or anyone giving you a hard time?
No.
Wow, this is an exclusive.
Right. So enjoy the daughter while she's young and everything like that.
I don't know if I'll be arranging something like that in front of 22,000 people.
Well,
but
you know what I did? I assumed. And you know what happens when you assume, you know, the old saying. So bad on
something very nice for your daughter.
Bad
on me. You're a great dad.
Yeah. And she did end up seeming to enjoy it. So if it made her, she's 21. Hey, I she's not my little girl anymore. So like I say, Scott, enjoy that time at Disneyland.
Oh, I know I will. I'll try to freeze her at that age in that safe, wonderful scenario. Did you? No. I was going to say my wife actually would love this story. She's always wanted to be on Kiss Cam. We used to go to games. She'd like try to position us and find the camera. It never worked out. Probably for the best.
Well, are you able to be a fan at any game?
Or not anymore.
Maybe you can. Maybe you can hire a faux Scott to sit with her in the stands, and then I can arrange a Kiss Cam with whoever she's sitting with.
You really think a lot about the Kiss Cam.
I really don't. But see, I'm a little rattled right now after what happened yesterday. Still, so
it was a very nice, you know, pulling of strings and making arrangements by you for your daughter.
Yeah.
And speaking of,
she's not getting any birthday or Christmas presents for about 5 years.
It was a lot of effort, and it was on a large scale. Speaking of daughters, like I say, something funny my daughter said. Just, you know, kind of not in family planning, but just kind of in joking around. My wife goes to my daughter. Oh, hey, you know, do you want another? Because we have a younger son. My daughter's 3 now. And she goes, would you want a brother or a sister? And she goes, a sister. No, a statue that looks like me. So she bargained.
Wow. That's the next best. That's a better thing. That's a better thing than having a deal with another younger sibling. So, well, thanks for taking us into that private matter on your family side, just as I shared.
Share things on people. Exactly. You know, when you do that, Chris, people relate. Listening at home or on the treadmill or driving to work, whatever they do, they identify with us.
Watch these subscriptions just go through the roof right now. Anyway, thank you for joining us on this Blackhawks Crazy podcast. Scott, have a great trip to Florida while we're sitting up here freezing.
Think about you.
I don't think Florida will be in the same situation as all the great Chicago media who went to Arizona to cover spring training thinking they were going to come back with a tan. Got news for them, pal. It didn't quite work out that way. So enjoy Disney World Part 2. with your family. And we folks hope you enjoyed this edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast and hearing from Stan Bowman himself following the trade deadline. You can follow along. Scott and I on Twitter. I'm at Bowden Tweets. Scott is at Scott King Media. Also go to the Blackhawks Crazy Facebook page at Blackhawks Crazy.
Facebook.com. / Blackhawks Crazy. I get lost with all these different URLs also.
I'm always thinking, you know, emails, the company or the things on the back rather than the name on the front. And also Tricky is Joe Romano for putting this podcast together once again. Tricky and good. So thanks to Joe for doing that. We'll talk to you probably maybe. Are you going to be back for the Buffalo game?
Yeah, I'm not going to miss any home games, so I'll be back.
Okay, maybe we'll try and get back with the folks then after this road trip, and then I believe the Buffalo home game is Thursday the 7th, something like that. So we'll try another one out then. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you down the road.